Okay, let's start. The Chumash and Shoftim comments that there is an iser, there's a prohibition against any sort of supernatural acts, onen, mechashef, etc. There's a long list of what a person can't be, a wizard, a soothsayer, correct, thank you. I'm not sure what the differences are. Probably some nafkamina for Dungeons and Dragons or something like that, but practically not. A person can't look into the future, a person can't create anything. That's what the Chumash tells us. One would probably think that they're safe assuming, in their assumption, that if the Torah says you can't do this, that would indicate that it's possible for it to be done. That would be the simplest understanding of it. For example, when in every place, in all the municipalities, there are certain laws on the books that don't make any sense, right? You'll have a law about parking your horse in front of a corral at a certain time. Laws get on the books, and sometimes they stay there even though they're no longer relevant. No one ever bothered cleaning it up. However, you're never going to get a law on the books that never made sense. Right? Everything has to make sense at some point or another, and from there it could be that we lost it. Therefore, if the Torah tells us you can't do this, and if you do it, this is one of the 613 mitzvos, one of the 365 negative commandments, it would be safe to assume that, therefore, it is possible to do it. It would not have been on the list if not. The Rambam, however, disagrees with that. The Rambam is strong in his opinion that it is impossible for a person to do a supernatural act without the help of God himself. In the event that God wants you to do a supernatural act, well, then you can split the Red Sea, you can do whatever you want, because God said so. And obviously that is allowed. Because if God did it with you, that's okay. The question is there a possibility of doing a supernatural act? Is there a possibility of splitting the Red Sea, of seeing the future, of creating something, yesh mi'ayin, out of nothing, if Hashem does not want you to do it? Without his help, can you do it? So the Rambam says, absolutely not. Miracles are only possible with the help of God. Only God can violate the rules of nature. So that being the case, there is a basic question against the Rambam. So what are the Pesukim talking about? If it's impossible to violate the rules, how could there be such rules? So the Rambam interprets the entire bunch of Pesukim as a prohibition against superstition. A person's not allowed to read horoscopes, a person's not allowed to be superstitious, you can't go to a palm reader, you can't have someone do tarot cards with you, what have you not. That is what is usher here. Now, one may want to ask, okay, that those are silly things to do. If a person believes in this, you know, that's not a very intelligent thing. Jewish people are known to be intelligent people. It is understandable we wouldn't want them doing this. However, death by stoning might seem to be a little over the top. A bad idea is one thing. We may say, you know, you're not allowed to do it. However, death by stoning, right, this, which would make it even more, or a worse of a violation, definitely, than eating non-kosher, definitely a worse violation even than murder. A murderer personally gets death by beheading, which is not seen as stringent as death by stoning. So how could the Rambam say that this is all a matter of superstition, this is all a matter of something that's silly, that we're encouraged not to do? So the Rambam himself, in the Mora Neruchim, in his Guide to the Perplexed, in his philosophical work, points out that he realizes a person might have an issue with this, and he explains that in fact this is no sillier than Avodah Zarah. Right? What happens in idol worship? I know that this chair is here by God, and I bow down to this chair, and I bring offerings to the chair. That's silly. However, what's the punishment? Death is one of the three cardinal sins. So the Rambam understands that the entire iser, the prohibition of magic and the supernatural, is all a matter of doing things that don't make any sense, and it's also sort of a subcategory of the iser, the prohibition against idol worship. Yes, Michal?
What about the macho magic? Well, there is such a thing as there are magicians in Moshava, macho magic, you know?
Ooh, so we'll get to that. Don't steal the whole shit from me. Calm down. Macho magic will be high up there. Most magicians tend to be Jewish. You know that? David Copperfield's Jewish. This fellow, Blaine, who always locks himself in funny things.
Houdini's.
Kudini Vado is Jewish. Nice Jewish name like Kudini, how can you expect otherwise? I think this is a real name. But I saw last year during the war in Lebanon, David Blaine went to perform in the bomb shelters up north. He's half Jewish, half Puerto Rican. Literally. He usually calls people Sephardic, but he's not. He's
half Jewish.
Right, Juana and his mother's Epstein's mother, just for the record.
So, from New York.
Yeah, so the Rambam understands that the entire prohibition against Kishon is sort of a subcategory of Avodah Zarah, and therefore nothing could ever happen. There's no possibility of what we would call black magic. However, you know, this is something that is seen as not befitting of the Jewish people. The Ramban, Nachmanides, and the majority of the contemporaries of the Rambam disagree quite vehemently with the Rambam, and they list off several proofs from the Torah, or the Midrashim around the Torah, which strongly indicate that the Rambam is wrong. Let's take an example, a recent Parsha, Parshas Balaam. So Bilaam was about to curse the Jewish people. God did us a great favor, and instead of a curse coming out of his mouth, a blessing came out of his mouth. Now, the obvious question is, why didn't God just let him curse him today until tomorrow? And based on the halachic principle of sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never harm me, it wouldn't have made a difference. Let him curse. So what? What's the big deal if he curses? The implication of the fact that God found it necessary to change Bilaam's words from curses to blessings indicate that had he got the curse off, it would have worked. Now, God clearly did not support that. But you see that Bilaam had the ability to curse in a supernatural way that would have worked. That's the simple reading. Going back earlier in the Torah, so at the Bris Bein Abisarim, when Abraham has a discussion with God. He says to God, listen, Rashi quotes that we have an issue here. He says, listen, God, I appreciate everything you did to me. I appreciate everything you did. But let's be serious here. I've looked at the stars, and I see that Avram and Sarai will never have a son. So what's all this worth to me? If Ben Mesek Besi, then Mesek Eliezer. If Eliezer is going to be the person who ultimately takes over for me, and not an actual son, what's the sense of it? There's not going to be any continuation. So, HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers and says, in fact, you're wrong. What you saw was correct, but Avram is not going to have a child. However, Avraham will have a son. Sarai will not have a son, but Sarah will have a son. See, you're missing a piece of information here. I'm about to change your name, and that's going to change everything. Note, God did not answer, what are you looking at the stars for? Wait, I tell you, I recently read in Gene Dixon that, in fact, I'm not going to have any kids. Right? You know, what kind of argument is this with God, you know? In fact, the National Enquirer indicates that I'm not having kids. What are we going to do about this? No, that was not God's reaction. God, in fact, said what you saw was correct. However, you're missing some information. Right? You have a similar situation when Bnei Yisrael leave Mitzrayim. Ki barahu tziyam. We read this on fast days. What was the argument? So when Bnei Yisrael were leaving, the wizards of Paro said, listen, we see that there is a constellation called Ra'ah that's coming to meet them in the desert. This Ra'ah indicates blood. There'll be blood for them in the desert. Let them go. They're going to get theirs. And in fact, when Moshe Rabbeinu argues on their behalf, he says, if you're going to wipe them out now, after the Egel, they're going to say, aha, we were right. So what happens? So God does not wipe them out, and he turns the dam of them he killed into dam milah, that they all had brises in the desert. But again, you see that God found it necessary not to forget about the blood. And in fact, that which the wizard saw through astrology, that there'd be blood in the desert, was correct. Right? What else did the wizard say? That the ultimate, the Moshiach Shal Yisrael, the person who's going to redeem Israel, is ultimately his downfall is going to be with water. Therefore, take all the boys born, throw them into the water. Were they right? Well, they were right. What was the downfall of the Moshe Rabbeinu? The water. Right? In fact, the fact that he had the issue of the Meimariva, he hit the rock, and he spoke to the rock. So over and over again, you see these people who clearly do not have God on their team are able to see the future, not exactly, but that which they see is correct. I mean, you don't have to go that far. When Moshe Rabbeinu first comes to the Paro, and he takes his staff and he throws it down and it becomes a snake, what do the wizards do? Same thing. When he turns water into blood, what do they do? Same thing. So the Ramban says, Mr. Rambam, you're off here. There clearly is an ability to do supernatural acts, as is indicated many times throughout the Torah. And when the Torah says if you do a supernatural act, you are put to death, it means literally a supernatural act. Not something, he agrees it's silly to read the horoscopes, but you're not going to get killed over it. As opposed to if you actually do a supernatural act, that you will get killed over it. That is the Ramban. It's interesting. Everyone ever learns the Shulchan Aruch. So, Shulchan Aruch in the middle of you have the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam. And on the sides of the various Nosek Kelim. Towards the bottom is the Gra. Everyone knows the Gra. The Gaon of Vilna. The Gra usually is very succinct in his comments. Tosfos Shom. That's like a typical one, right? Right? Ayin Gemara Rosh Hashanah. He does not write all that much. However, if you look in the laws of Mechashev, of magic, is a rather long, a good 2-3 line, which is long for him, on the Shitas of Rambam, where he goes and says the Rambam has been utterly rejected, and it's because he read too much Aristotle, that's what threw him off. Of course, Aristotle by name, as the reason behind the Rambam messing up here. And that's what we generally assume. Almost all Rishonim, with the exception of the Rambam, maybe the Ibn Ezra, all the Achronim afterwards have basically followed the Ramban to indicate when we talk about magic and the supernatural, that which is liable with the death penalty, we mean black magic. The Gemara in Sanhedrin discusses this. It's very interesting. The Gemara says that usually, whenever we talk about halacha, there's two categories. It's easy to get to two. Mutar and Aser. Either you can or you can't. That's it. Everything is black and white. There are two exceptions to the rule. One is Hilchos Shabbos, and the other is Kishuv, where there are three categories. There is Mutter, there is Aser, and there's a third category called Putter Aval Aser. Right? Aser means you can't do it, Mutter means you can do it. This third category means that you can't do it, but if you do it, you won't be liable. Right? On Shabbos, we usually assume this means Dirabonah, right? If somebody violates Shabbos in a very purposeful violation of the 39 malachas, you're liable for that. Other things on Shabbos you're allowed to do. There's a third category of things that the rabbis tell you don't do it. Right? Muksa is the most popular example. Muksa is Dirabonah, right? If you violate Muksa, you're not going to get the death penalty for it, but you still shouldn't do it. That's the third category. So too, when it comes to magic, to kishuf, etc., there are these three categories. You got your mutter, you got your aser, and you got your potter. So what fits into the three categories? So the Gemara gives a case, and this case demonstrates the three of them. It is a case of the Marake Kishuim, the man who is gathering cucumbers. So what happens? A guy comes to a cucumber field, and he says, What do you say when you want to do magic? No? Vilchum?
Nachal magic.
Or abracadabra.
Abracadabra.
Abracadabra, right? You know what abracadabra means? Abracadabra is a Jewish word. Evrakadabra. I will create as I speak. So he says that. You tell the nachal magic guy, he'll be impressed when you tell him that. Right? Say, evrakadabra, and suddenly there's a poof. Like saying, a la peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, which also works sometimes. And with that, a puff of smoke comes out, and all the cucumbers get together and they walk to the side. And everybody applauds. And we take the guy and we kill him for being violating the...
I'll tell him on Wednesday when I go to Moshe Shabbat.
I'm sure he'll be happy to hear. So that's what we call Oser Maisa. If the guy actually accomplishes what he's out to do, that is Chayiv Misa. That is category number one. Great trick, you can only do it once, though. That's the downside. So you better save it for the right time. That's one possibility. That is what's called Aser. The second category is what's called Pater Av Aser. And that's known as Ochez Esalainayim. What's Ochez Esalainayim? The Gemara explains, same guy, same cucumber fields. Again, he says, what? Macha magic. And with that, poof, there's a thing of smoke, as you'd expect. And everyone watches, and the cucumbers move to the side. Everyone applauds. However, this time, when you walk out to the cucumber field, they're still there. Nothing actually happened. This is what we would probably call...
Like in Wild World, Wisconsin, on top of the hill, they have a cucumber field, maybe on the hill. Maybe there are walking cucumbers out there.
Maybe. I don't know. Next time I go to Wild World, I'm going to keep an eye out for that. So, what you have, that's what we probably call an illusion. Right? Hands, illusion. Ochez esayinayim, one would essentially, he grabs the eyes. It's an optical illusion. He fakes you out. Right? So, therefore, when you go, when there's the big poof, etc., so, it's potter, right? You don't get potter also, but you shouldn't do it anyhow. That's the Gemara second category. The third category is the guy comes out there, there's cucumbers, says the magic word, poof, it all goes. However, the magic that the person is using is Kabbalah. The person uses what's called the Sefer Yetzirah, the Book of Creation. We generally, tradition has it, the Sefer Yetzirah goes back to Avraham Avinu, and Avraham originally wrote the Sefer Yetzirah. And if somebody has the Kabbalistic power to do it, you're allowed to do it as many times as you want. That is actually mutter. Those are the three categories that the Gemara talks about, and I'd like to take some time this evening to discuss the three separately. Now, in terms of practical, right, ask you, which of the three is probably the most practical? What would you say? The second one, right? That would seem to be pretty obvious. That, which we call Ochez Esayinayim, would really seem to fit in with what other people call Macha Magic. Right? Macha Magic, I don't want to break it, I don't want to burst anyone's bubble here, but it's probably just optical illusion. So the question is, so that would be the case, if we take it literally, Ochez Esayinayim, as I explained it, people who do Macha Magic will not be put to death. However, they would not be supported either. It's not the type of thing we should be allowing them to have. So,
that's just for sort of entertainment. Nothing real happened from that.
Well, that's why it's the idea is potter avoser, meaning that we're not going to punish you, but you should not be doing it.
But nothing happens when he does it. I mean, the cucumbers are still there, so nothing real came from that illusion.
Right, but why the assumption that something real has to come for it to be a problem? Again, when I bow down to the shir, what real comes out of it?
Nothing, of course.
Okay, and we all agree that that's liable for the death penalty. Right, so there isn't necessarily a connection between, we'll discuss that, but there's not a connection between something happening and the punishment.
I don't remember where it was, if it was in Yavamas or in Avodah Zarah, that there was one rabbi that was doing this black magic, but he was doing it so that he'd be able to refute...
Lahavin Lahoros.
Yes.
Right. You're allowed to Gemara in Avodah Zarah, but it is.
Okay.
Which says that you're allowed to do this in order to learn it.
Right.
But again, that wouldn't seem to be applicable in this case. So, one would guess that we have a problem here. And in fact, the Sefer HaChinuch, when listing the mitzvahs, says that this is an issue. A person is not allowed to do... optical illusions, and the reason he explains is because it'll lead people astray. If I start doing magic, if I say, look at me, I can walk on water, right, even though it's an optical illusion, people might come to think I'm a deity. Right, so therefore, that is the reason you're not allowed to do it. That's and in fact, many of the modern poskim pass them that way as well. Avadi Yosef has a well-known tshuva about magic tricks at weddings. And in his, and he says that, in fact, it's absolutely inappropriate. A person should not have a magician performing at that type of thing. That's Rav Avadia's opinion. Now, based on that logic, that the reason that we're trying to avoid this is concern that someone will try to pass himself off as a deity, Rav Moshe Sternbuch, the current, I think, head of the Eid HaRedis in Meir Sharm, also was chief rabbi in Johannesburg for a while, has a piece where he says that indicates that in the event somebody would show his tricks beforehand, that would make it okay. Like, the person gets up and says, I'm going to do some magic tricks. And let me just show you that up my sleeve, I have the following, and all my cards are marked. And down here, there's really a bag with a rabbit, so it looks like I pulled the rabbit out of the hat, etc. I didn't really cut it in half. And he just goes through the explanation, saying that it's not really magic. That would be allowed. So, for example, people maybe know of Nachman Cohen. Nachman Cohen, he wrote Master Masechtas. Things. He has a Haggadah. He used to be the rabbi in North Riverdale, recently retired. His son is a professional magician, and whenever he performs, the first act he gives away, the first trick. He says, these are all tricks, I don't have any supernatural mouse to prove it, this is how he did the first one. And then he goes about it, and he has a little card there, this is not supernatural. So based on Rav Sternbuch, that of course is absolutely permitted, because no one's going to think this guy's a deity, because he's made it clear. He himself said he isn't. He in fact indicated in one case why he isn't. I'm not going to give away all my tricks because I got to make a living. But here's one of them. Yeah? Try this at home. That's the way he does it. Interesting to note, Rav Avadya Yosef even disagrees on that. And there's a logic behind it. Rav Avadya says, well, what was the concern? The concern originally was that if somebody starts doing these tricks, you'll think that perhaps he is a deity. That was concern number one. However, in the event that I give away my tzitzis, that's not going to happen. However, you have a new problem. And what's that new problem? As follows. First, we'll say as follows. Well, if this guy didn't tell me how he did it, I would have believed it. Right? If this guy told me it was magic, I would have believed it. So how do I know that all the miracles that we hear about in the Torah, it's not the same thing? How do I know that the splitting of the Red Sea wasn't just that guy from Universal Studios? So once you give away, yes, granted, once you give away a secret, and you make it clear that this is all sleight of hand, you no longer have that initial concern of the person passing himself off as a deity. However, you end up with a new concern, that this will lead people to doubt the miracles in the Torah, because anything now can be explained away.
Life is a suffering. You don't know what's real, what's not real.
Right. So therefore, Rav Avadya assumes that even that is not allowed. And particularly, he says, when it comes to a case of, in case of children who are more gullible, right, who are more likely to watch you to see these performances, that is something that's a problem. It's interesting. There's a bad joke I like to say. So I'm going to say it right now because I like to say it. As follows, there's a shuva by the Shevet Halevi, Rav Vosner, where he talks about having a magic show for children, and he says that is in fact osur, which I always like to point out means that he passes like the rabbit, that tricks are not for kids. There's a few people kind enough to chuckle at that, and I appreciate it. Thank you. It's a big classic. Right? You know, those who didn't laugh at me weren't listening. So right now we have two opinions. One opinion is that it's usur unless you tell the trick, and the second opinion is it's usur even if you tell the trick. There is a third opinion, and that is the opinion of Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein says it's all mutter. That's why we love Rav Moshe Feinstein.
What a guy.
Rav Moshe Feinstein has a certain logic behind it. He says as follows. He says, listen, we know Samson, Shimshon was a great gibor. No one ever told him he couldn't use his strength. Right? We know from the Midrashim that Naphtali had tremendous speed. No one else ever told him he couldn't use it. So too, if someone naturally has quick hands, who are we to say you can't use it? If a person has a certain God-given talent, he should have the ability to use it. One could ask a pretty basic question on that. Well, that's really nice, Rabbi. But didn't the Gemara say it's usur? Didn't the Gemara say, ha'ochei v'sanai and potter av usur? What are you going to do with that? So Rav Moshe explains as follows. Rav Moshe says you can use supernatural powers in two different ways. One, I could put a spell on these cucumbers, and the cucumbers will get together and walk into the pile. Or, I could put a spell on you, and you will believe that you're seeing that, even though it never happens. Either way, I'm using supernatural powers. Now, in one case, I'm actually accomplishing something, so I'm put to death. In the second case, I'm accomplishing nothing. So I'm not technically punished. It's a lav shein bo maisa. But either way, in order for it to be asur, a person has to use supernatural abilities. So therefore, that which we call magic tricks is 100% mutter. Now, does anyone follow Rav Moshe Feinstein? So there is one apocryphal tale that might indicate somebody follows it. There's a story, there's a Rebbe in Waina, Rabbi Baruch Simon, when he was a 10th grader in MTA, he had a friend there who was learning magic tricks. So he said to him, you know, I think this might be a problem. So he said they're going to go see Rav Soloveitchik about it. So the two of them went to got into the Rav's apartment. They went to Rav Soloveitchik and they said, Rabbi Soloveitchik, we want to know. There's two 10th graders from MTA. Are we allowed to do magic tricks? So he said, what are these magic tricks? So he starts explaining. He said, show me. So I said, okay, Rabbi Soloveitchik, pick a card, any card. You know, maybe they pulled a quarter out of his ear, you know, whatever tricks they did. And he said, this is not magic, this is 100% allowed. So one could read into that this was the same assumption, that magic involves something supernatural. These card tricks and sleight of hand, you know, that's a whole different story, that's nothing. So again, we have three opinions. On the one end of the spectrum, you have Moshe Feinstein that everything's mutter. No, the end of Avad Yosef, everything's usher. And in between, you have Rav Sternbuch, that if you give away the secrets, it's okay. If not, no. Those are the three opinions regarding what we call magic. Let's try to deal with the other ends in the time we have left. Dealing with the real magic. So, let's say I'm a collector. I like to collect things. So I like to collect the Averis. I want to do all the Averis. I have a little checklist, you know. Every time I get another one, I check it off, right? So now I decide I want to do this one. I'm up to, I'm into Shofstim already. I've been moving along nicely. I'm quite proud of myself, you know. Trying to send a feeling of accomplishment. This is some real good ones I passed to get here. Right? So now I want to go do this. Is there any possibility nowadays? Can anybody do supernatural acts? Anybody? So maybe it was possible at one time. Is it still possible? So there is a fair amount of discussion about certain phenomena that are out there that science cannot yet explain. The key tshuva of this is the Binyan Siyam. The Binyan Siyam is written by a good yekit, Kvetlinger, the Aruch HaNer. Aruch HaNer's tshuva is the Binyan Siyam. So he has a fascinating tshuva written around 1840. So there was a fellow who was very sick. He was the Rav in Germany at the time, as he always was. And doctors had given up most hope. However, they suggested that there's a certain professor in France that could perhaps help him. The professor's name was Professor Mesmer. What was Professor Mesmer doing?
Mesmerizing.
He was mesmerizing people, as fate would have it. That's where it comes from. Professor. There you go.
Brother Wayne.
So, grandson. So, Professor Mesmer invented something which was called magnetism, what we now call hypnosis. Right. Right. He was hypnotizing people. And at the time, science did not know how it worked. They were able to see that he was able to accomplish certain things through this method he had devised. However, biologically, they had no explanation as to why it was working. This guy was not a fraud. They knew he was the real deal. But they couldn't explain it. So the question that came to the Binyan scene was as follows. Can I go to Mesmer, or do I have to worry that this is some form of black magic since it can't be explained? So the Binyan Siyam basically takes the following approach. I'm going to touch it up a little bit to make it all more understandable. So the Binyan Siyam says like this, and this is not a quote. Let's say I took my DeLorean and went back in time 400 years. Okay? Let's say somehow I managed to do it. I'm back 400 years ago, and there's a person who's dying from an infection on his back. So there's nothing they can do about it. And I say, don't touch the back! I got these little pink pills. Take three a day for 10 days and you'll be all better. What would the people assume?
Magic.
And they'll think I'm crazy, but if they do it and it works, magic. Now, what actually happened? Antibiotics. was the fact that they didn't understand it then, would that make it supernatural? Would that make it magic? Of course not. Antibiotics would have worked the same way 400 years ago as they do now, as much as it's part of nature. And no one would ever think of telling you you can't take antibiotics because it's supernatural. We have a perfect understanding of how it works. So too, in that time, before there was a perfect understanding, likewise, one would have to say that it's absolutely mutter. So the Bingensian writes that this, in fact, is something that we do not yet understand. However, it is part of nature. As such, it's absolutely permitted. Interesting, years later, Diane Weiss, who is the previous head of the Eidah Haredes, and in Sefer Minchas Yitzchak, has a wacky tshuva. I think there's a movie based on it. There's a fellow, Reverend Tony Agupo. Reverend Tony Agupo was in the Philippines, and he had this thing that he did. People would come to him that were sick. They would lie down in front of him. He would pass his hand over them. The body would open up. He'd stick his fingers in and fiddle around a little bit. He would then pass his hand over again. The body closed. There was no scar. Thousands of people supposedly had been cured this way. Is you allowed to go to Reverend Tony? That's the question he's dealing with. So he quotes the Bingensian. And he says, I don't understand. Let's say we had a new technology. We're not sure how it works. So we want to know whether you can use it on Shabbos or not. So, would anyone say, well, maybe yes, maybe no. Ha! Go for it. Of course, that's Suffolk deraisa l'chumra. If there's a potential that you're violating Shabbos here, of course we can't just gamble it. So how is he saying, well, maybe we'll understand it, maybe we won't understand it, therefore go for it? He said the Bingensian does not make any sense. Therefore he says that you can't go to Reverend Tony. Now, I would point out that if I got the two questions, I would probably be Mekel on Mesmer and Machmer on Tony the same, based on a different svara. One passes the smell test and the other doesn't. Mesmer makes sense. Tony stinks. Tony's clearly a fraud. So, even though it all came out the way that we'd expect it to, there's a question as how do we follow the Bingensian, but in fact we do. Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva about hypnosis, and it's a very short tshuva where he says, I think it's mutter, and I spoke to Rav Henkin, and he agrees with me. End of discussion. Now, hypnosis, as by the way, what do we understand now, hundreds of years later? Probably even less than we understood then. The more, my understanding is, the more that they study hypnosis, maybe other people here know more about this than I do, maybe not. So, the more they realize that this is something that really has power, that can effectuate biological changes, but how it works, scientifically, no one really understands. Now, there's a lot of things like that. Acupuncture. Right? The martial arts, Tai Chi. We have somebody in Yeshiva named Professor Harvey Silver. This guy's a ninth degree black belt. If you know him, he's a classic. Right? So, he has the ability, I've kind of seen this, to meditate. And when he does meditate, he touches the table and explodes. So you ask him, how does it work? And he explains to you that there's a certain energy in the earth. And by meditating, he makes himself a conduit to this energy. Then he focuses the energy in his finger. When you have so much energy in your finger, and you touch it, of course it's going to explode. I don't understand a word I just said. Right? The whole thing doesn't make a bit of sense to me. However, it works. Does that make it supernatural? Well, perhaps no. Perhaps had Western science began with the same assumptions of Far Eastern science, it's not all based on blood flow, but it's based on energy flow, maybe we would understand it. Right? So that, all these things seem to fall into the same category of science which we do not quite yet understand. Can we be Mekel? So based on the Bingensian, it would seem that we don't have to worry about potential for Kishif, that this is black magic. As long as it seems reasonable, it seems that we believe that you can go forward and imagine that science will catch up to it. There happen to be a lot of other categories of potential black magic that do come up. We'll just mention them quickly. Probably the most notable one is kaporis. We have this strange tradition that we take a chicken and we announce that this chicken now has our sins on it. We spin it around our heads, we kill it, it's all better. And since this chicken is now so full of sins, we don't want to deal with it, so we give it to the poor people. That always amazed me. Oh, this stuff's terrible. Give it to the poor people. Right? So the Shulchan Aruch was a Sephardi, the Chaver. Right? And this is awesome. He said, this whole thing's terrible. He said, this is Kishuf, don't do it. And the Ramah kind of says, yeah, but we do it anyhow. And we do. Right? Now, so you have these categories of certain things which kind of straddle the line. At what point does superstition become awesome? Getting married outside, under the stars, you know, getting married at a certain time of the month. There are many things that we do that would seem to be somewhat superstitious.
What about Ayin Hara?
So Ayin Hara is perhaps different. Ayin Hara, if I give you an Ayin Hara, it's probably the same thing as me cursing you. So why should that make a difference? That's a hard question. Maybe we'll touch on it a little bit. But it's basically the reverse of me davening for you. We believe that I can bless you, and that works. So if blessing works, cursing should work all the same.
Okay.
Now, I'm not sure how blessing works or cursing works, but if you believe in one, you have to accept the other.
It's not a magic act.
Yeah. Right.
Going one step further, this big business in Yerushalayim with the
Bindle. So that's interesting, actually. So the Gemara in Shabbos has a thing about Darkei Amori. And if you look at the Tosefta, it's a long list of the following things are also because of Darkei Amori. Right? Meaning that these are things that are superstitious, you can't do it. So the only thing that's on the list that we still do is the Red Bindle. The Red Bindle is actually on the list as also.
Right.
And the fact that Madonna is matter, I don't know if that makes a big difference. Can't be.
Now, you know, in Yerushalayim, I went...
Back here, Maury. Let's keep it reasonable.
I went to an Ayin Hara exorcist.
Oh, yeah? How are you feeling? I don't mean to pry, but you made it.
You made sure it.
Bubbles.
No, she's like molten metal, poisoned in her head, and she sees eyes and all this stuff.
We'll get to that. So these are all things. Let's get to that. Okay, so we said there's a third category. We'll move on to that now. The third category is safety. It's here. There's certain types of Kabbalistic magic that is permitted. Right? But forget about pigeons getting rid of a disease. Okay, So for example, the Gemara tells a story of Rava created a golem. Making a golem is allowed. Another story talks about that there was a Neymar, one of the Shabbos had nothing to eat from Rav Malchus, and him and someone else, they had a cow, they made themselves a cow out of Sefer Yetzirah and they ate it. There is an absurd amount of literature written on these creatures. For example, there's a famous tshuva by the Chacham Tzvi about whether a golem can count for a minyan. That sounds crazy, but it's in the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah quotes it. Now again, I'll make this clear. This isn't the case of the 620 minyan where 10 golems are sitting there trying to talk. Right? Right? This is like the Jewish press. This is like Mendy and the golem. This is the real deal. And there's a discussion about it, about whether it's allowed, whether it's not allowed, right? There's discussion about these cows that you make from Sefer Yetzirah. In fact, so Rav Yaakov Emden. Yaakov Emden is a well-known character, and he was quite a character in his day. So you read his tshuvas, a lot of them are really fascinating. So one guy asks him, can you count the golem for a minyan? So he says, well, you asked me, my father, the Chacham Tzvi, already answered the question. But once you ask, let me tell you, my grandfather once made a golem, and it was growing, and it was growing, and it was growing, it's going to take over the whole world. So he decided he was going to wipe out the shame and the fart, and he fought, and he kicked, and he got scratched, and he got beaten up, and he saved the world. What? Where did that come from? Right? There's just a tremendous amount of literature that you kind of assume that this happened all the time. Oh, yeah, sure, this golem, that golem. So there's a lot of discussion about that. These animals that you make out of the Sefer Yetzirah, do you have to shecht them? Are they really fleishiks? Can you work with them on Shabbos? Can you bring them for a carbon? Right? The amount of discussion about this, you think it happened all the time. I'll just briefly mention, so I went to Yeshiva Kerem Yavne in Israel, and they used to get new sfarim sometimes. It's in the library. So they get this new Sefer. It's a Finn Sefer, Nachas Osher. Some guy in Kiryat Ono put it out. It was his grandfather's writings. It's got 20 tshuvas in it. That's the only thing. And of the 20 tshuvas, I think two of them were about, can you count the golem for a million? And three of them were, if someone drops dead and comes back for life, what's their status? So a full 25% of this book was dedicated to these types of questions. And I was just fascinated. I was just amazed until I noticed that it's the grandfather was Osher Anshul Miller, was the chief rabbi of Transylvania. So then I realized, oh, this is practical, because it's a minion. He said, listen, rabbi, we only have eight, but, you know, Dr. Frankenstein brought his monster, and the mummy's here, you know, who can we count? You know, this is what he had to deal with. He was the chief rabbi of Transylvania before the war. And it all made sense. We're getting a little bit into overtime, so let me just end with a thought that may touch on this. So, the issue of Rebbes and Kabbalists are an issue that definitely is out there. Right? A lot of people are claiming to be Kabbalists, whatever they are, is claiming that they're you get a bracha for them, it'll fix all the world's problems. So, it must have been almost 20 years ago now, there was a meeting of the Rabbanim of Eretz Yisrael who saw this coming on. They decided there's something we have to do about this. So they got together and they called in Rabbi Yaakov Hillel. Rabbi Yaakov Hillel was in fact, still is, the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva Shaar Shemayim, the top Mekubal Yeshiva in Yerushalayim. And they asked him, could he please write a layman's book, a guide, how to tell the difference between the real deal and a fake. So he did, and in fact, it was called Tamim Tiyah, and it got translated into English. It's Faith and Folly. And mostly, it wasn't that helpful, but he has a basic rule that's important to know. So nobody can know anything in the Chochmas HaNister. I mean, no one has any can possibly have any ability in the hidden knowledge unless he is a perfect expert in the Chochmas HaNigla. Unless the person knows his shas and poskim backwards and forwards, unless you can ask this guy any tosos and chulin, and he could rattle it off for you, you know this guy's a fraud. So that's what you pay a rabbi for, right? To give machinas to these guys to see if there's any truth to them. I think what would work best for me regarding this was, so at one point I was very bothered by this. I always thought, in my simple thoughts when I was a young man, that, you know, by and large, if we do good things will happen to us. And if we do bad things will happen to us. Not instantly, but in the long run, right? You know, my son doing bad things, he has it good now, but he'll get it in the end, right? And vice versa. That being said, why, if I'm a good guy, and you curse me from today till tomorrow, that shouldn't make a difference. If I'm a bad guy, you can bless me from today till tomorrow, it shouldn't make a difference. So what's this deal with brachas? What's the deal with ayin haras? Right? How does any of this work? I figured I have to talk to somebody about this. However, I knew that depending on who I spoke to, I'd be answering the question. If I go to some brisker, they'll say, of course, the whole thing's a crack. If I go to some chassidusher, this is the way God made the world. Don't question it. So I was kind of stumped who to talk to. So in yeshiva, some of the Meir Tversky. But Meir Tversky has the perfect yichus for this. On the one hand, he's a Tversky, right? He's one of the chassidim. He is currently the Talmud Rebbe. On the other hand, his maternal grandfather was the Rav of Soloveitchik, the ultimate brisker. So for you, this is a guy, he can go either way. So I can turn the hat around. Fur on one side, felt on the other. So I said, listen, this is my question. What can you say about it? So he said, this is Smith's Chassidus, so I'll tell you a story. And this is a very good story. And he heard it out, this is his favorite story. He said that his great-grandfather was Rav Dovidel Tolner. He was one of eight Tversky brothers. All of them were great Rebbes. However, Rav Dovidel Tolner, he said, was known as both as the greatest Rebbe and the greatest Balmofes. He could do miracles like no one else could do miracles. So, One time his brother, the Rachman Strisser, came over to him and said, I don't understand. I work so hard for the littlest miracle. And you crank out miracles like there's no tomorrow. What's the deal? What's your secret? I said, all right, I'll tell you. He said, how do things work in your court? Someone comes to the Rachman court. Some guy comes in there, some brachin, a yid, you know, the guys. So right away you call him in. And if he's hungry, you give him to eat. He's thirsty, you give him to drink. You let him speak his heart, you know. He doesn't leave till he feels much better, and he feels that things have been taken. He needs money, you give him money. We have a different policy here in Tolman. What do we do here? Sorry, the line is crazy. It's 2-3 weeks till you get in to see me. And the place is a zoo. You're crying babies. The place is nuts. Finally, the gabbai goes over to you and says, listen, the Rebbe is a very busy man. You get 1 minute. 1 minute, you say what you want, and you're out of there. So the guy walks in there. He starts telling his story. At the 32nd, there's a knock on the door. The Rebbe comes in and says, the gabbai comes in and says, listen, I told you the Rebbe is very busy. Finish what you got to do. And with that, I mutter some words and wave my hand, and the guy's out of there. So now, how do you think this guy feels? This guy feels like 2 cents. He says, listen, I got all these problems. Health. The Rebbe was supposed to save everything. He was supposed to be this great Baal Mofes, and nothing. Nothing. He said, what am I going to do now? What am I going to do now? Turn to Hashem and David. The second the guy has that realization, it's over. Once the guy realizes that the only way this is going to happen is if he davens for himself, that's it. He said, so what's the moral of the story? The moral of the story is, yeah, maybe it's true. Maybe there are people that have matters, have certain connections. But we have to understand that we're all b'nei melachim. We are all children of God. We have a direct in. Whatever they're going to do is not worth nearly as much as what we can do. So whether these guys are for real or if not, and if it helps to pour molten lava on your head or whatever they do to you, I don't know. Right? I have my doubts personally, but you know, I'm not going to write it off. But whatever they can do is worth so much less than whatever it is we can do. So I think if we keep that in mind, I think we won't have any problems with these issues.
One more question. You see so many references to shaving.
I think we discussed this at length already this summer. I think it was the first shot.
It was the first shot.
First job, okay. But don't worry, you can get the tape.
You have the tape?
Yeah, Ralph is putting it online. Not to worry. All the drushes, whoever sleeps with them, just put them online. Don't worry, it's okay. It's all good. We're all among friends.
Pleasure, pleasure.
All right? Thank you very much.
Yeah. I can't talk to you.